Good evening. This is Ontology Summit 2012, session number 3 on Thursday, the 26th of January, 2012. My name is Matthew West, and I'm co-champion with Henson Graves of tracks 1 and 2 of this year's Ontology Summit, Ontology for Big Systems and Systems Engineering. Welcome to our first virtual session. Could we have the first lot of slides for my introduction, Peter? Thank you. So this is just an introductory slide to say that indeed we are on track 1 and 2 of the Ontology Summit, and that Henson and I are the co-champions. Could you move to slide 2, please, Peter? So this is showing the mission for our tracks, combined tracks 1 and 2, which we've merged together. You can see that Ontology for Big Systems track aims to bring key challenges to light with large-scale systems and systems of systems for ontology and identify where solutions exist, where problems require significant research, and where we can work towards solutions as part of this summit. The areas to be considered include, and we have a nice shopping list here for you, working with integrating results of models with multiple languages, the systems life cycle and the issues of sharing data within and between life cycle stages, the difference between requirements and delivered systems, systems of systems versus systems, the nature of components and the difference between these and the parts installed, the connections between system components and what they carry, the specific role of social, legal, and value-related aspects in systems architecture, modeling, and design, systems behavior, federated systems, both as a big system and as a solution to some of the challenges, principles of how to construct good quality reusable models, i.e. ontologies, and the management of ontologies of and for large systems, and the challenges in developing and maintaining them. Could you move to slide 3, please? So here we just look at an introduction to this session, which is looking at the systems and systems engineering problem space. In this session, we want to look at the problems in big systems and systems engineering where ontology has a role to play. The aim is to uncover the various areas where challenges exist that the world of ontology can contribute to, and which we will delve into in the next panel session. Okay, and that's the end of that opening presentation. I'd now like to invite Jack Ring to speak. So Peter, if you'd like to bring up... thank you. No, here we are. And here we have the panelists. Sorry, this is slide 4. The panelists are Jack Ring, Anatoly Levenchuk, Giancarlo Gisardi, and myself, Matthew West. I'd like to start with Jack Ring here, if you'd like to bring his slides up. Jack Ring has a long and illustrious career with companies like General Electric, Honeywell, and IBM, and is co-founder of Ontopilot, which promulgates the automatic fault detection algorithms, models, and ontologies. He's also a fellow of the International Council on Systems Engineering, leading an effort to achieve interoperability of the languages used to describe systems. Over to you, Jack.
So this is about the word unified ontology for systemists. Systemists, by our thoughts here, are human beings who strive to put things together so they work for some purpose. Sometimes they call themselves system engineers, other times they call themselves a variety of things. I should say right up front that ontology may not be the right word for my purpose. What we're trying to do is achieve interoperability among human beings who are engaged in creating and maintaining systems. And we're beginning to see perhaps that the word ontology has several different meanings, and we may be expecting more than many ontologists are accustomed to providing. So please keep that in mind. If I need to use some other kind of word, we'll do so. Next slide, please. Our motivation and context for our work is that there are approximately 1 million people around the world who engage daily in creation or evolution of systems. Most of them do not label their work system engineering, and they don't do it according to any prevalent reference or standard. Now, the second bullet says they use myriad conceptualizations and misterminologies. Ambiguities even within local tribes often lead to misunderstandings, unintended consequences. And what we find when we try and get systems to work is that the incidence of error, even in the system engineering phase, increases with work group size, heterogeneity of the work group, and interpersonal styles of the participants. Meanwhile, society is demanding ever more encompassing and thereby complex systems, and in general, we are failing to respond to society's demands. Just one example of the aspect of this diversity is illustrated in this little URL, which we won't go through today. You can look at that your later. Next slide, please.
Yes, slide three is slide three is on.
I generally will not respond by saying the slide is on. You could assume that. Yeah.
This slide is a little complicated. It's the field of endeavor of a system. You start at the top and go counterclockwise. The purpose of this slide is to show you the span of interest that a system engineering person has to deal with through understanding problems down to the left-hand side of intervention strategy, then down to beginning to design the system. At the bottom of the ellipse is where the engineering of systems takes over to build or buy components and get them all working together, testing the system, and up to the, on the, toward the right-hand side, getting the system operational out in the field, and then continuing once it's running. The purpose of a system is what it does, PosiWid, is known, which is frequently a surprise to the people who designed the system. Therefore, they adapt it to the context it's in, and then they assay the value of the system to all the stakeholders. The top bar says the focus is on value, the middle bar says the focus is on purpose, and the bottom bar says the focus is on the system. And that bottom third is where most of the literature and education called systems engineering is focused. You do not get much information on how to deal with the purpose of a system and very little on how to deal with the value proposition for a system. But in the coming era, system engineering people have to be able to go clear around that ellipse counterclockwise. And so all the languages, all the terminology, all the things that they need to communicate to one another, that is, we're trying to illustrate here the span of that ontology, if you will. Next slide. Now, this slide attempts to illustrate the diversity of system engineering. On the left side, we use three terms, extent, variety, and ambiguity. And down below, you see that extent means the number of cognates in the problem system. Variety is the number of unique cognates, both semiotic and temporal. And ambiguity is the fog, or it is the mass of conflicting data, which presents cognitive overload to the system engineering people, who typically result with under-conceptualization or designs that are inadequate. Across the top, we say low, medium, and high. The white squares are system engineering and the problems that we knew about 50 years ago. They're low in extent and variety and have no ambiguity. And the current instructions and tools, et cetera, are focused in that area. starting about 1970-75, customers wanted systems that were somewhat more stochastic. And so some system engineering has evolved to be able to handle the yellow boxes. Today, whether it's called complex adaptive or chaotic or whatever, we're faced with problem situations that are high in extent, variety, and ambiguity. And most of them are non-deterministic, unpredictable. And we are asked to design systems that can deal with those is at the bottom of the lambda k, to illustrate the information or knowledge turnover that is required in each one of those situations. That is, in the old style engineering, or even today, if you're engineering a simple system, a knowledge turnover in 10 years or a half life of what you know in 10 years is okay. Getting a little bit more frenetic systems, however, the knowledge turnover is 1 year. And when we look at the system engineering for swarms of autonomous robots, the knowledge turnover within the system engineering activity is approximately 1 month. Something new, surprising comes along and must be dealt with by the system engineering people every month. Things that they didn't know about previously. Next slide, please. So our objective then, particularly in participating in this panel, is to figure out how to enable accurate and timely knowledge exchange among systems, regardless of the tribe they come from. Meanwhile, doing that, increasing their productivity and innovation tenfold over what it is today by 2015, because that is needed out there in society and the marketplace. Our dream is that if we can install appropriate ontologies among these humans, that tenfold improvement will kind of automatically happen. That is, it says that 90% of the delay and errors and all that today is due to humans not being able to interchange knowledge accurately and timely. We're favoring unification of the diverse Weltanschauungs. We are not trying to standardize a system engineering ontology. We'll leave that to ISO and other kinds of people. What we want is unification or interchangeability of the concepts, the language, etc., that system engineers use. And right now, we're encouraging and facilitating those efforts within this group. Also, the International Council on Systems Engineering has a system science working group that is looking at this problem. Also, the International Society for System Sciences is looking at this problem with us. And finally, the International Federation of Systems Research, we're having a session on this situation in April of this year in Linz, Austria. One of the conversations is about the language for the praxis, the praxis of systems. So that's where we are. Next slide, please. This indicates what we have come to believe right now is the variety of the problem that we're taking on, in that it's got to work for it's got to cover a variety of system classes and types, from little systems that run vacuum cleaners right on up to big systems like that URL will show you, which is the new Volkswagen factory in Germany. Our approach we're taking is to create human-readable and associative descriptions first, using concept maps or mind maps or whatever, then ask the ontologists to transform those that knowledge into machine-readable and algorithmic constructs. We have to deal with multiple levels of abstraction. A system manifests all the way from a simple concept in one person's mind out to 30 million lines of code in some specific installation. There are at least 7 levels of abstraction in making all those transformations. And so our ontology has to provide that kind of capability. Then multiple stages of big system realization from day 2 when you start designing it until year 30 when it's still out there running and has been modified 1,000 times. We're now trying to deal, of course, with multiple signs in the Peirce sense for the same interpretant, which we call NIMS, because we're not trying to standardize the language, we're trying to unify. Then what you call it and what I call it, we don't have to argue about, we simply have to understand one another. We also need to serve multiple levels of proficiency. A young person or a person just starting out in the practice of system engineering has a certain level of proficiency. And the real exemplars in this field are about 30 times more proficient. So our ontology can't serve just the experts. It's got to be able to span all the different kinds of human beings. And because we understand that no one ontology is going to serve everybody, then the question is, okay, how do we modularize? What is the modularity of the ontology that's going to allow us to bring up themes and variations for various tribes and various problems? And given that, then, what is the appropriate arrangement of the multiple viewpoints and NIMS so that any one user can orchestrate their view of the world and have the machine help them do their system engineering. Next slide, please. We are currently working on concept maps, and this is a modularity that we're currently have. We're doing the concept maps for what we mean by system praxis, separately by system engineering, fourth by fault detection and correction, which turns out to be very important and largely overlooked in most system engineering literature, education, et cetera. Although I was thrilled to see from Anatoly's report of their chapter meeting yesterday that they automatically carry fault detection along in their work. And finally, the concept maps the semantics for the concept of a model and the activity of modeling. Most everybody uses the concept of, it talks about modeling, but most people's models aren't anywhere near the same. Next chart, last chart, please. Some prompts that I thought might be useful for this panel discussion are shown here. I won't read through them, but we do need to sort out ontology versus language versus process versus ends. The other issue we think is we've got to be clear about whether we're trying to achieve proof of correctness when we build an ontology or just simply show that it's fit for purpose, but for which purpose? Then having created an initial ontology, how do we continually make sure that the integrity of it as it evolves? One of the concepts we have, which may not be true for the rest of you, is that a system model is the same as a situated ontology, which is the same as an algorithm. It's semantically the same. The next point we would like to get clear with you, everybody, is whether it's useful to see, therefore, a formal ontology as really a massive N-term algorithm with N multiple entrances, so that any user can approach that ontology from any facet of the ontology and have it tell the user what path through that ontology is going to be useful to them. And some people working on this now are coming to believe that category theory and abstract data types are going to be useful guides on how to go about modularizing and orchestrating an ontology. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
And thank you very much, Jack. This is Matthew West again. Now, we're not going to be taking questions at this stage or start the discussion. We will have a discussion period after all of the presentations. But you can, of course, already get on asking questions in the chat room. So do please feel free to do that. So our next speaker is Anatoly Levenchuk. Anatoly is from Moscow, as you will work out very quickly when he speaks. He's the president of the Tech Invest Lab and director of research for INCOSI Russian chapter. He's involved with projects in the nuclear and shipbuilding industries around systems engineering and data integration using ISO 1596. Over to you, Anatoly. Are you unmuted?
I think I am unmuted.
You are indeed. I can hear you. Over to you.
Yeah. First slide, it's obvious. Second slide, please. I am a president of TechInvest Lab, and we have two ontology-related projects. First project is .15926. This is a software platform for ISO 15926 programming. And currently we have available editor for ontology and reference data of 15926, ISO 15926, but we prepare a language workbench with second version of it. And the next project is Praxis. This is development of engineering enterprise methodology. We want to have best practices, and we want to have best practices integration in ontology-based. And this ontology, we choose 15926 because this is method of systems engineering, and engineering the enterprise perform method. And in this method, we have a system, target system, system of interest, as a main system. And we need a joint method description or project description and product description. And we start developing not it by ourselves, but we have about 100 members in Russian-speaking community around these two projects. When Matthew West was in Russia, he was one there because about 2 years ago, it was more than 20 people that tried to do something with 15926. And now we have much more to do with this. And next slide, please. Slide 3. And we have yesterday in Kosa Russian chapter about 3 hours of discussion of these slides. But this was in our Russian, and we have a video of it, and we publish this video. But usually we have ontology-related discussion about once a month in our chapter. And it is interesting that we have not only ontologists, but we have a few ontologists, it seems to me, in these meetings, except two or three people, but more engineers, because engineers need ontology in their everyday practice. And what we study from this, I try to assess in several words. It seems to me it's already written in my slides and it's obvious, but as I understand from previous speeches, that not all the people known about systems engineering well, and engineers not very well known about ontologies. And this is a very difficult thing to speak in about these two disciplines. If these disciplines, yes. Certainly, because there is doubt in even in this. And first thing that when I asked what have ontology deal with engineering, I always answer this is formalization, because now systems engineering and in specialty engineering is semi-formal. This is like pseudocode. All these drawings, all these engineering diagrams, and even SysML, system markup language, this is pseudocode. This is not rigorous, and we have many misinterpretations and many errors in such engineering languages. And ontology, like John Sowa has remarked, true ontology, not all-like terminology in all, but true ontology can cope with this informality, and we can have formal system representation and system of interest and enabling system. There is always two systems. I not mentioned system in operation environment, like nature systems and others. But at least two systems we have always in development. System of interest, target system, and enterprise that have evolution, that force evolution of system of interest during its life cycle. And this is enabling system. And I use this terminology of ISO 15288. And this is ISO with practices of life cycle of systems engineering. And in COSE is agree that this will be main standard. And this standard will be the basis for harmonization of all other systems engineering standards and also body of knowledge and in COSE handbook. And contemporary version of handbook is harmonized with this standard. And I will use this terminology mainly. There are several other standards that have further description of further explanations of this 15288 standard, but it seems to me we can put terminology, at least not maybe ontology, but at least terminology of this standard into our basis. And as I mentioned, if we will have formal foundation, we will have domain-specific languages that can cooperate in one language workband. And I have a thesis that contemporary product lifecycle management systems is a try to develop some kind of complex language workband for systems engineering, like contemporary software workbenches try to join several domain-specific language in one interactive development environment. Please, next slide, slide 4. And why we need this engineering method formalization? We have many meetings when we discuss contemporary formalization in engineering. There is two steps. First step, we have one repository with that join description, join models from many authoring tools that work with their domain-specific languages. And this is need to have collision discovering and collision prevention. And all the software and tools, this is simply editors, maybe very complex and to editors of very unusual languages, but there is no automation. This is simply collision discovering and prevention. And this is contemporary PLM systems, product lifecycle management systems that have such a repository. But we think that it should be done second step, ontology-based engineering method definition. If we have this engineering method definition, and Jack Rinn tells that this is algorithm, because systems engineering, this is a method, this is algorithm description. If we have ontology of system engineering, we can regard it as an algorithm. We can compute systems engineering process in computer. And then we have generative design and generative manufacturing. Because generative manufacturing, we can generate program for effectors, for robots, for printers, for assembly lines, for different effectors. And then we need to this second step more rigor method description and more rigor product description to have a generative design and generative manufacturing. Next slide, please. But slide five. But to provide this, we need not usual folk ontologies, because by definition, all the ontologies is common sense folk ontologies. If people consider, most of people consider that the Earth is flat, it will be in ontology. It is world with flat Earth. But very few people consider that Earth is sphere or ellipsoid. And it will not be considered like ontology by most of people, because this is not shareable understanding of reality, not shareable concept. And in engineering, we have very often, like in top science, we have very often a very powerful concept that is not yet shareable. And we need the best available concept, the best available view of world, the best available ontology, maybe counterintuitive, but not maybe, as a rule, counterintuitive, not folk, not common self, common sense, not even linguistic, but formal. And we should follow this for have most compact, most contemporary, most state-of-the-art engineering models. And thus we take in our team and in our engineer friends, we have ISO 15926 as very counterintuitive ontology, but very progressive up to our opinion, and very close ideas. This is the base of NATO TOGAF, Enterprise Architecture Ontology, and high-quality data model of Matthew West. That is next step of ISO 15926. And this is true ontologies, not linguistics, not terminology. And we try to work with these counterintuitive ontologies. But we still need common sense and folk ontology, because we have legacy based on not state-of-the-art engineering. We have many legacy knowledge, and we still need this common sense and folk ontology. And we have experiments. We have our .15926 editor that work well with 15926 data. But we already load into this the hierarchy in all of psych ontology. And we need instruments to work with counterintuitive and intuitive old outdated ontologies like legacy ontologies. Legacy knowledge ontology. Next slide, please. And sixth slide. Listen me.
Yes, I can hear you. You're doing fine, honestly.
Sixth slide, please.
It's up on my screen.
I'm not seeing it in my screen. But nevertheless, immediate usage of ontology, this is PLM data models. There is a class of systems, but by major vendor of computer-aided design systems, computer-aided engineering, and this is product life cycle management system. Usually, this system consists from two components. First component, this is vast repository for all the data of engineering projects, all the models, all the languages, all the documents, all that we know about this project. This is some kind of mega model in terminology of Atlan Mod group. This is all that we know about our models. And the second part, this is workflow and issue tracking, because we always have enabling system around system of interest. And this system characterized by its organization, agents that perform some work with system of interest, and workflow, issue tracking, case management, processes, and projects. And this is, these processes, case management, project, issue tracking, and other things, this is system engineering defined, system engineering as a method. And thus, PLM systems have a scheme or data model that cover both parts. This is, for example, Aviva NetPortal. This is Dassault Systems Innovia. This is Bentley Systems, several servers, for example, Open Plant line of servers. This is Smart Plant Foundation and of Intergraph. It seems to me this is all the PLM vendors have such a model. And there is consensus what is system, but still no consensus about what is system engineering. And we have already some kind of system ontology about target system in these PLM systems, but we have almost empty systems engineering ontology in this workflow part. One exception is Dassault Systems Innovia. They have some kind of RLFP, requirement logical physical life cycle, that they have as a base of system engineering process that they follow in their PLM system. But I think that in every PLM system, we have rudimentary ontology. And it is very interesting to directly apply this ontology knowledge to fine-tuning or maybe rewriting these PLM systems. Next slide, please. But still we need to load to this PLM system many legacy standards, regulations, and prototypes. And we have a next problem. We have a very good natural language processors up to now. Very good. Very fine. But we have no engineering texts that deal only with texts. All these systems engineering have, for example, standard of systems engineering. This is text and some formulas and some other types of diagram, for example, piping and instrumentation diagrams, and some pictures, sketches, and many standards have not only text. We need new advanced parsers for engineering language. This is not natural language processing. This is some kind of multi-pseudocode language processing. And this is this needs combined usage of terminology or semiotics and ontology. And it seems to me this is a very hot topic, and we plan to have meeting about linguistic processing in our chapter in several next week, because we want joint usage of these techniques. And then next topic, this is about ontology evolution. And in ontology we have usual critics that ontology is static. Ontology, this is how what is in the world. And this is static view. But we need ontology evolution because we have knowledge what is ontology changing during engineering process. And we think that we can go with less formal semantics in ontology, maybe more formal pragmatics. And maybe we need not only belief revision theory, but multi-agent belief revision, and as was mentioned, Bobin T. Garden, massive parallel ontology evolution, because we have federation of ontology, and we have many PLM systems, and we have evolution of ontology in every these PLM systems, because this is different teams of people, and they have different knowledge about the world, and they communicate, and we have very fast during engineering project this ontology evolution, and we need more theory. And next thing that we study in our activity just now, this is separation of administrative and ontology domains. We need separate unit of knowledge, for example, object information model in 15.9.26, and unit of administration, for example, chunks in reference data library. And we have no theory up to now about this differentiation between granularity of knowledge and granularity of knowledge administration. And all this deal with ontology evolution. And next slide, please. This was eighth slide. Next slide, please, nine. And then engineering method and logic. Engineering method, this is heuristic. This is not logic. But this is not classical logic, because I know that contemporary logic can work with heuristics. The knowledge that work almost every time, but not every time. This is not probabilistic, but more complex than probabilistic. And this is a way of engineering knowledge. Engineers not waiting why scientists have logical theory. They work with heuristic, and we need ontology that deal with heuristic knowledge. And we maybe need go beyond logic, not beyond logic with probability, with contemporary logic with many modalities, but completely beyond logic into another mathematics. For example, we have several people that study category theory for ontology representation and ontology-based computation. For example, in our team, this Osman Bineev, and he was invited to introduced to Matthew West when Matthew West was in Moscow several time ago. And he, Osman Bineev, continued to work with this category theory for ontology representation. And next slide, 10, please. And thus we need computation with ontologies. Because if we have no computation, we have only contemporary product lifecycle management system with repository, and we have no generative design, and we have no generative manufacturing. We have only step one. And if we have computation, we need immediately not only induction, deduction, we need abduction. And I simply refer to work of John Sova that every time speak about this, and I have not much to add to his words. Next slide, please. And then we think about architecture of ontology-based engineering information system. This is slide 11. And we think that contemporary enterprise architecture based on enterprise service bus. And this is usual. We have enterprise or enabling system, and we have service bus. Thus, I suggest that we need systems engineering service smart bus. And this smart bus that ontology based, we have reference data in some kind of ontology or federation of reference data libraries. And this is smart bus have this, has access to these data. And this access is service oriented architecture. This is services, data services, with intellectual knowledge discovery. And this is not simply stream matching in search, but this is intellectual search. And we have services with intellectual search. I can ask questions to the part of this system. And this is bus. I ask questions to the bus, and who knows the question have an answer. And then this usual architecture for service-oriented architecture, but data services is unusual. And we have defined transport layer, knowledge routing. And we have defined representation converting, adapters for knowledge editing and processing applications. And it seems to me it can be syntactic layer and semantic layer. Semantic layer, this is mapping. And syntactic layer, this all this discussion about RDF, all, and other syntactic things. And one more, I refer to Sova, to John Sova postings in Ontolog forum. And this systems engineering service smart bus should support not only knowledge about system of interest, for example, system of interest. This is nuclear power station, nuclear submarine, or 2 kilometer long bridge, or underwater drilling, and many other products. But also knowledge about enabling system. And enabling system, this is not on, not simply organization. Enabling system, this is extended organization. There is many subcontractors of this project. And up to now, we start speak next step, ecosystem, because this there are many projects provided by several organizations that that have shared reference data, shared ontology, and they comfortable work one with another in several system of interest projects. And this architecture is aimed for product lifecycle management federation of the future. And we have now many, in every enterprise we have already federation of PLM system. We have not one PLM for one system. We have already PLM federation to one system. And many authoring tools that attach it to every of these PLM systems. And questions? I'm finished.
Okay, thank you very much, Anatoly. We will take questions and discussion later, but if you go over onto the chat room, I think you'll find there's already been quite a lot of discussion already, that you've really generated quite a lot of discussion already.
I will try to go and
respond to some of the points that people are making there. Thank you very much. That was much appreciated. Our next speaker is Giancarlo Gisardi. I hope I've said that right. Giancarlo is an associate professor at the Federal University of Espírito Santo, Brazil, where he leads the Ontology and Conceptual Modeling Research Group. He's also a member of the Executive Council for the IAOA SIG on Ontology and Conceptual Modeling. Giancarlo, over to you.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to talk about these issues here. From the perspective I'm taking here, it's very hard to distinguish between the goals of the first track and the second track, namely between engineering and engineering of systems. Are very much affected by the language and methods we choose to analyze and design them. So my talk will kind of cross-cut these two tracks, but I guess the previous talks did the same. So in the interest of saving time, I'll move straight to slide two. Thank you. And the point is that in my view, the biggest problem we have to solve in the next decade is semantic interoperability. All interesting systems, complex systems, engineered systems we have to deal are characterized by concurrently developed autonomous and heterogeneous components. And I'm using this in a very, very generic sense to include both the usual large-scale application integration scenario, database integration, government open data, but also something that both Jack and I absolutely mentioned, which is this language federation and the need to provide for semantic interoperability in the system of people, right? So federations of models and federations of modeling language are examples of complex engineering systems. So in the end, we have to, most of the things we will develop in the future will be either integrated with other things in their life cycle, or they will be built by integration of things. And again, when I say that, I include language, modeling language. So the issue of semantic interoperability, just to illustrate this, I'm moving now to slide three, please. The issue is rather simple to explain. If we have two models, and these models here could represent meta models, could represent ontologies of certain organizations, or in a kind of finance sense, what the organization assumes to exist, or what underlines a certain language system, or this could be database schemas, or and so on. So ontologies underlying a system, assuming from a representation view of information systems that information systems represent a certain portion of reality. So the issue is that in order to find, to integrate these things, to interoperate these things, I have to, in the end, find what's the right connection between, for example, here, the element, the model element A on the left, and the model element C on the right. And the point is, this connection is not in either of the models. It's not in the labels, and it's very rarely on the axioms that describe these models. The connection, actually, is to be found, I'm now on slide four, please, on the relation, on the nature of the relation between the reference of the two model elements in, let's say, reality in a loose sense. I don't want to get into the discussion of the relation between conceptualizations and reality and so on. So let's just say reality as a synonym for a shared conceptualization here. So in this semantic domain, what we need to understand is the nature of the relation between this reference and The point is that the relation between these two things can be many different things. It can be a relation of identity, of numerical identity or a qualitative identity. It could be a relation of adherence, could be existential dependence, numerical dependence, generic dependence, historical dependence, orthood, and so on. Many different things, right? So, the success of our interoperability enterprise, let's say, in the relationship, in finding the correct relationship R prime to be established between the two syntactical elements, it depends on our successful understanding of the relation R between the reference, right? So what we need is to have a discipline, a body of knowledge that can help us can provide us with theories to understand the nature of these relations. And to have a vocabulary of rich distinctions so that we can understand this connection, and then we need a language to precisely characterize this connection. So, moving to slide 5, please. We now believe that ontology can help us in doing that, and rightly so, because this understanding these distinctions that can be used to articulate the notion of the things in reality, the different modes of existence and different relations, which are the very difficult approach for this 2400 centuries, right? So we are very correct in assuming that formal ontology can help us in doing that. The point is, the way we use ontology nowadays, it's broader than this traditional formal ontology sense. So I'm now in slide 6. If I can compile a definition of ontology, which is recurrent in the literature, we'll find these two characteristics here. One, that an ontology is a reference model of consensus that's supposed to support different types of semantic interoperability tasks, so domain understanding, domain communication, and meaning negotiation, problem solving with respect to the domain. And two, that an ontology is an explicit and declarative machine processable artifact, coding of a domain model that is there to support efficient automated reasoning. Right. And often these two characteristics are appear in the literature as if they were more or less the same, or if the quality criteria that you need for one, let's say, positively reinforce the other. It's actually the other way around. Right? So the quality criteria that we need in each of these definitions is not only the same, but they hurt each other. It's very well understood that in order to have a very expressive language to do meaning negotiation, to fully characterize the subtle distinctions that we need to understand how things relate to each other, this language will have poor computational characteristics. On the other hand, in order to guarantee decidability and computational tractability and non-functional requirements of the sort, we need to have languages which are very limited. Not only that, but the point is that in the tradition of knowledge representation, the bulk of the focus has been on developing efficient reasoning mechanisms and algorithms, but very much dispensing with two ontological notions which are absolutely necessary in order to have the models that we have here in the definition one, right? And the point is to close up this characterization, what we need to do is to understand the relation between these two references. But this is extremely hard. And Jack, I think, put in the chat, the problem is not only, actually the worst problem is not when we we know we are not talking about the same thing, but when we falsely believe we are talking about the same thing. This is Nicola's false agreement, well known by now, which is true. It happens all the time. I was 2 years ago, there was this United Nations global meeting for government interoperability framework that I was invited to chair the panel on semantics. And I was listening to people from this 45 different countries, and the examples are very much recurrent on how we fail to do that, on fail to find the right connection, the right relation between these things. And very, very often, the problem arises in exactly those things that we believe we know what we're talking about. So things which are believed to be routine and well understood. So to cite one example, I remember one government project that was cited in the situation that they were trying to integrate 14 different government organizational units. And the problem was actually the notion of organizational unit that meant 14 different things in 14 different organizational units. So in general, the issue is that these things are actually quite closely connected, and the relations between them are very, very subtle. So I think the first thing that I'd like to see happening in practice is for ontology engineering to take an engineering view on this problem. So I'll move now to slide 7. And I mean, I could instantiate this with things, with a discourse from every almost every engineering field. I'll take software engineering here, but it's very, very well understood. Of course, this is a simplification that in software engineering, we need a conceptual modeling phase in which we are interested in expanding the domain and making the description a description which is clear and pragmatically efficient and can help the stakeholders to understand, to reason, and to problem solving, and to negotiate meaning. And also a description which is truthful to the underlying domain. Right? This is extremely hard to do. This is very costly. But once we get this right, we can generate from that several different implementations which satisfy completely different sets of non-functional requirements. And design is there for two reasons, basically. One is to understand the problem space there, the design space, and to point to the best spot in this design space. So what would be the best set of technologies that would achieve this set of non-functional requirements. And two is to provide a way to go from A to B, from conceptual modeling to this implementation, satisfying these requirements. So typically in software engineering, we have an expressivity in the conceptual modeling language that cannot be directly translated into the implementation. And then we have to come up with interesting design solutions, design patterns, for example, or architecture styles and things of the sort. And in this phase, we are reasoning with that. What would be the best architecture style to implement this system that would satisfy the set of non-functional requirements? I think the first thing that would be nice to see in practice is an understanding that the same thing should happen in ontology engineering, that we need ontology first as a conceptual model in which we just want to understand. I'll move now to slide 8. We need these ontologies as a reference conceptual models that we want them to be as expressive as possible in capturing fundamental aspects of the underlying domain and making explicit the underlying ontological commitments. So this is even more necessary, as in my opinion Jack correctly pointed out, that we the way perhaps is not achieving standardization, is not pursuing standardization, but maintaining several different worldviews that can coexist in a coherent way. So for that, we need to guarantee consistency within the model and consistency across models. So we need to have inner consistency and explicit ontological commitments so that we can understand how to hook things across models. But since this is to be done by humans, it's already extremely hard to be done by humans, we need language that also provide for conceptual clarity, which are efficient in the tasks of communication, domain understanding, problem solving, and meaning negotiation. And for that, we also have to understand how humans do that. So cognitive science and visual cognition, things of the sort, do play an important role here. But from the point of view of expressivity, and before I say that, so if I'll just go back a little bit to slide 9. So once we have this ontology as a conceptual model, then we can have different codifications of this ontology in different codification languages, like different data log languages or OWL or Prolog or different description logics or, you know, Castle or relational database or Haskell, whatever. These different implementations or codification languages would be justified in satisfying particular sets of the design requirements. So it's not even a valid question, in my opinion, to ask if OWL is a good or bad language. It's a codification language. It should be either suitable or not to a certain design problem. It is to some design problems and not so much to others. So ontology, the phase of design here, would have the role of understanding this design space, but also to providing a mechanism to systematically come from this conceptual model, which will be typically more expressive to a given implementation. And we have to do choices, architectural choices, and choices involving the type of requirements we need in this in a particular case, if we need to reason open world or closed worlds, and so on, right? So these are, I think, architectural choices, and that will be very closely related to this kind of non-functional requirements. And even when we have one single conceptual model mapping to one single language, we have multiple choices. So to give one single example, if we take a language like OntoUML that is rich in model aspects that capture model ontological notions, and we have to map to a language like OWL, for example, we would have at least four different ways of doing that. And these four different ways would imply in different, let's say, forces of satisfaction of non-functional requirements. Another thing I'd like to say on this slide, this kind of picture is also becoming interesting to work in e-government scenarios, because what happens sometimes is that you get cases in which local administrations cannot afford developing a full-fledged ontology in a particular complex domain, but they don't want to reuse an OWL or RDFS ontology as well, right? So we could have a kind of federation or repository of ontologies in which the conceptual model itself could be reused instead of an implementation. And from that conceptual model, we can, in a different case, with different requirements, generate a different implementation. And also because of this difference in expressivity, which you need to have in the two different layers, if you do not capture the richness and all subtleties of the domain in the conceptual model, but go straight to the implementation, it's like, you know, you have a 3D model and you are only capturing a 2D projection. So it's very hard to generate different projections from that 2D projection. So for this conceptual modeling phase and for a conceptual modeling language that is supposed to support those tasks of domain understanding and communication and meaning negotiation, I'm now moving to slide 10. in my view, we cannot dispense with truly ontological questions. So language which are ontologically neutral or which only talk allow us to represent different modeling structures but do not allow us to reason which structures are better than others from an ontological point of view, they won't be suitable to support this kind of task. So in doing this conceptual modeling phase, in my view, we cannot dispense with these truly ontological notions. And since there we are trying to understand the subtle aspects of reality, I think we better reuse all this knowledge which has been developed in 2,400 years, dealing with theories of identity, dependence, classification, composition, and so on, right? And developing an ontology of systems along the lines we've been discussing in the forum would necessarily, in my view, reuse many of these aspects of neurological notions, classification, causality relations, laws, commitments, dispositions, and things of the sort. So we do have these theories available, but I think we still have a lot to do in using these theories to create engineering tools. Because in my opinion, we have now a scalability problem. We have a number of people that understand these subtle notions and that could work in hard semantic interoperability problems in analyzing and building complex engineered systems. But it's very hard to teach this and henceforth to scale this because it's very hard to find people that would know that. And it would take, 15 years for people to actually master this, right? So we do have some methodologies which are based on these notions. Ontoclean is clearly an example. OntoUML is another example, and there are others. But we have to do more in that sense. We have to build language. And now I'm moving to slide 11. We have to have conceptual modeling language whose modeling primitives are actually reflections of the subtle ontological notions. We need to have specific computational environments for that. We need computational mechanisms to deal with this complexity, but in my opinion, different types of computational mechanisms. So for example, one thing we've been doing with OntoUML is to use visual simulations to generate instance examples automatically so that the user can understand the consequence of what he's modeling. In this type of thing, in visual models that can, in this case, can spread across possible worlds, and I think this provides a very, very important mechanism for validation. And some of these validations mechanisms and the language that are used there, decidability and tractability are not really important issues. But aside from language and methods and tools, one aspect that I'd like to emphasize here is this notion of patterns, which I think is very much a good example of maturity in engineering. I think this thing will become more scalable as well when we are able to capture the knowledge contained in ontological theories in patterns that can represent standard solutions for recurrent problems. I think we have a long way to go there. We have some very few patterns available in ontology engineering. Mostly codification patterns, so patterns on how to get around limitations of semantic web languages, for example. This is just, a very, very tiny part of the problem. We need transformation patterns that could solve that design bridge of coming from conceptual models to particular implementations. But we need as well modeling patterns which are derived from these ontological theories. So, for example, how can we represents roles which are played by instance of disjoint kind. this is a very recurrent problem. It's very nice if we can capture that in a pattern which can be recurrently applied. We need to represent characteristics, contradictory characteristics of things, properties, contradictory properties which can be predicated to the same individual. This, again, is a very recurrent problem which we can have a pattern to solve. We need to have properties which can be measured in different measurement systems in different contexts, but that can and should coexist. Again, we can derive modeling patterns that can solve this problem. We also need what I'm calling here analysis patterns. These are, I'm using the term in a very particular sense. Analysis patterns, in my view, saying here, are patterns that can be used to analyze properties of ontologies as a model. So one example is transitivity of partihood, which is something which affects even in the lowest implementation level systems which are derived from conceptual models. Point is, as we all know, partihood relations are not always transitive, and sometimes they are transitive into a certain point. So we have to block the transitive chain of partihood at a certain point. Nowadays, we have language that can express that in the codification language, but we leave the very hard task of identifying where this chain stops to the modeler. Fortunately, now we have modeling patterns for that, for isolating the scope of transitives of partihood, to give an example. Another thing that I think would be extremely useful to have is to have a catalog of problem patterns. So problems which are, but now not coming, these problems wouldn't come from ontological theories, but they would emerge from practice. So conceptual modeling problems which reappear very often in practice. One example is the counting problem. Another example is the problem with modeling roles with disjoint allowed kinds. These problems have been discussed in a third one, the transitives of partial relations, when is it transitive or not. These problems have been discussed many, many times in literature, and capturing this as a benchmark of modeling problems, I think, would really help to advance ontology engineering as a discipline. In my view, they could play a role testing different ontology modeling solutions, similarly to how thought experiments work in assessing various of different ontological theories and explanations in philosophy. By the way, one interesting catalog of now old catalog of problem patterns in the literature is Buchan's Data and Reality from the end of the 70s. Which is filled of modeling problems which are mostly of ontological nature. He didn't know how to solve many of them, but I believe we can provide for a solution for them nowadays. Different conceptual models, different ontologies as conceptual models, which are related to different implementation artifacts. Now I'm moving to slide 12. We have this kind of what I'm calling here a vertical complexity, so a federation of models, so different codification models related to the same conceptual model. But we also have this, what I'm calling here, horizontal complexity. So even if it's conceptual modeling, we might have to deal with a multiplicity of conceptual modeling languages. This is certainly the case nowadays with enterprise architecture, with enterprise organizational modeling and so on. So in real complex organizational models, we have a multitude of languages which have to coexist. This is a problem, I think, also related to what Jack mentioned before, the problem of, for example, offshore software development. But in enterprise architecture, we have, if we take a TOGAF or ARCHINATE or RMODP, these different enterprise architecture modeling language, they actually very often don't fill the boxes. So they don't provide Archimate, for example, doesn't provide the language for process specification. If we look at the languages which are popular and have well-established communities for process specification, like YAML or PetriNet and so on, or ARIS or VPMN, these languages are very poor in modeling information. By that I mean structural models or data models, and are very poor in modeling goal models or strategy models, and so forth. If you look at languages that are good at modeling goal models, like Tropos, iStar, Armor, and so on, they are very poor in modeling behavior. So I think here as well, as it is happening now in practice, we have to deal with this federation of modeling languages that capture complementary viewpoints of the same underlying system. But then we have again a semantic interoperability problem. So I'm moving now to slide 13. We have to interoperate these different models, which are which happen to be meta models, models of language. And here, of course, ontology and particularly foundational ontology plays a very, very important role. How plan, for example, on one modeling language relates to activity or action or trace on another model. So, moving to slide 14 to close up, I think the most important point here is that we need different representation and analysis approach with different characteristics for different phases of analysis and design of complex ontology-based engineering systems. We need a conceptual modeling approach for that, which is based supported by well-founded ontological theories. Here I'm emphasizing in the true ontological sense. And I believe we need a mature body of knowledge organizing in terms of ontological patterns, modeling patterns, analysis patterns, codification, transformation, problem patterns, and so on. Now on slide 14, I just like to mention, as Matthew briefly mentioned in the introduction, I co-chair a special interest group on ontology and conceptual modeling in the scope of the International Association for Ontology and Applications with Gary Wundt and Oscar Plaster. And we've been planning and executing a number of activities which have to do with the things I mentioned today. So if you are interested, please, you can sign up in the address I put here. And we are organizing a workshop and special issues and so on to try to fill this knowledge gap. That's it for me. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Giancarlo. Well, I was going to be the next speaker, but I've just been on the chat with Peter and we're running rather short of time. So we're going to put that off and ask Henson to give that presentation at the next session.
Matthew, may I make a suggestion? Since this presentation has some of Hansen's material and some of your material, and since you will not be able to be with us next Thursday, maybe you could at least go through the main essence of your part. And
well, I only had one slide on here, and it was just something to tell a story by, and I can do that on the email exploder. So I'll do that. I think is probably going to be best because we're down to 25 minutes now, and if I spend 5 minutes on that, there'll be even less time for questions.
Your call.
Yeah, no, that's fine. So if I've noticed there's been quite a lot of good discussion in the chat room. If you would like to ask a question of any of our speakers, would you please raise your hand? There's in the chat room, there's a little hand button down in the bottom right hand corner. If you would raise your hand, and then I will call out, and then it will be appropriate for you to unmute yourself with star 7. So over to you guys and any questions. We seem to have a stunned silence. If there are really no questions, of course, there is time to for me to say something. Let's give people a moment for... here we go, Peter.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, I would actually want to discuss a little bit about the merging of the two tracks. There seems to be some support and some dissent about merging of two tracks. I think the situation is, I mean, we have to draw the line somewhere, and the fact that we have a certain track only helps us cluster certain discussions. The real discussion, especially the mailing list discussion, are bound more by the subject line rather than a track that it belongs to. So I just wanted to make a point.
Say a little bit about why I felt that it was a sensible thing to do. The thing that I noticed amongst those who were most active was that the way that systems engineering and engineered systems were being viewed by different people was really quite different, and that the interpretation that different people were putting on them was different, and that it would then be quite hard actually to get agreement about what the systems engineering or the engineered system track would be about, but it would actually be relatively easy to get the two together, that what different people had was different ways of slicing the two together, rather than a clear idea of one or the other. I was a bit surprised about that, but that was nonetheless what seemed to be happening to me. So I'm pleased that for that reason, that it enables different slices of the two together to be taken, rather than having to pick a slice between them, which would have then perhaps been awkward. Any other questions? Any follow-up on what I've just said?
Maybe we can have you go through your slides after all.
Well, that would be fine. Yes, I'll bring them up if there are no questions. I'm certainly happy to. There's no point not making use of the time.
Yeah, please. It's up. Slide.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
I'd better start by introducing myself, I suppose, haven't I? So
Matthew?
I'm hello?
Matthew, I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm not on the on the chat board right now. I had wanted to ask Giancarlo, what foundational ontologies you might have in mind to start with.
Who is this?
Todd Schneider.
Giancarlo, you'll need to go star 7 if you haven't already done so.
Hi, Matthew. Am I unmuted?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, take some time to unmute this on Skype. The question was, what kind of foundation ontologies did I have in mind? I think that was it, right? There are many available foundation ontologies, right? Examples are DOCE, BFO, GFO, BW, W, and so on. The ontology I've been working with, the one I've been working with, is an ontology called UFO, the Unified Foundation Ontology, which it began as an integration of GFO, the General Formal Ontology, the ontology of universals behind Ontoclean and DOCE in the past, but by that I mean 8 years ago. And it's developed into a full-fledged foundation ontology to address specific gaps in DOCE and GFO, to address specific needs of conceptual modeling language and systems. So, for example, there's an ontology of relations there, which of material relations, main relations, let's say, which wasn't present in DOCE. On the other hand, there is an ontology of universals and, let's say, tropes or moments or property instance which wasn't fully developed in GFO and so on. So the and now this UFO ontologist one, which is let's say it, composed of three layers, three fragments. The first one it's focused on structural aspects. So let's say classes, instantiation, partial relations, relations, dependence relations, and so on. There is a second part which is based on, which is focused on events and process, and a third one which is based on the other two, which tries to address, let's say, social aspects. But I have to say that this second and third part, we still have a lot to do there. The first is very stable, and it shares the same foundation of the other ontologies I mentioned. It just extended them to deal with specific points that wasn't of interest of neither Dolce or GFO.
Okay, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does, very well. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I guess, Peter, then we're back to my slides.
There is a hand from Martin.
Oh, sorry, I can't
from
see that. Martin, what's your question, please? Star 7 to unmute.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Hi, everyone. It's actually probably an extension of the comments rather than a question itself. But at the end, I will have a doubt. So in this new adventure of generating ontologies on the top of this kind of new fashion to on the top of the normal ontologies create the meta-ontologies and this kind of a fashionable way to say seek ontologies or conceptual ontologies or foundational ontologies. The most important from my perspective would be the language. So this language will be or need to be federated in somehow. And with the systems at the moment going, ontology systems and engineering systems going into the federation stage of exchange of information and interrelated the content of the information. What will be the expectations about this language federation, or is actually how we can elaborate more in details to make more understandable the situation about languages and federation in these environments? So what will be the perspectives that we are tracking then? And obviously, my doubt would be more associated if somebody from the representatives can elaborate more in terms of federated systems, federated languages and ontologies, federation of ontologies even though. That's it.
Thank you. Are any of the speakers wanting to pick that up? I think all of you touched on that, and indeed I would have done too. If the speakers would like to unmute, by the way, so that's star 7, all of you, so that you can respond to questions, that would be an appropriate thing to do at this stage. Well, I'll just say that at the moment, what we're trying to do is just identify what the key components are that we are going to be try to look at during particularly the on the email list. During this ontology summit, so that's over the next 3 months, just about. And it seems to me that this is, it slightly surprised me, I have to say, but it seems to be one of the things that is a very common thread, and it's not just about different, you know, sort of modelling languages in the sense of OWL or Common Logic, but it's even different languages, as in piping and instrumentation diagrams versus electrical line diagrams. All of these are different ways of modeling things, and how you get them to interoperate, and indeed, since most of these don't have proper formal semantics, how you actually get them to be clear what they mean in the first place, because that can vary with use, is a significant challenge. Any other speaker have a response? Okay, Fabian, you have a question.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great. My question is for Jack, who mentioned or linked ontology strongly to algorithms, and that spawned some discussion in the chat, and I think will be good to hear from him and to explain why he was making that connection, because at least from my perspective, they don't even overlap. I mean, ontology is a way of specifying what is true about this specific part of reality, and algorithms are the set of instructions that allow a machine to do something, but there's no commitment about what is true in the world necessarily. So I would like to learn more about that.
Okay. Who was that specifically aimed at?
I think it was Jack who mentioned that.
Jack. Are you there, Jack, still? I think we don't seem to have Jack with us. Can I find him? I can't find him on the chat either. I think we may have lost Jack.
Oh, sorry.
So probably the best thing is to put that question in an email onto the Ontology Summit list and ask the question specifically to him there. That would be the best thing to do. But thank you for the question.
Thank you.
That means I think there are no other questions. Ali had his hand up but has taken it down. Okay. Right, I think that's back to me again then, Peter. Are you...
Yes, I have your slide.
We have about 10 or 12 minutes, so we'll probably get at least part way through. Okay, so time to introduce myself. I'm Matthew West. I'm the director of Information Junction these days, but that follows some 30 years working for Shell. I'm a participant in the ISO TC184 SC4 committee, which develops standards for industrial data, and a contributor to the development of ISO 15926, life cycle integration of process plant data, and a co-editor of ISO 18876, an architecture for integrating industrial data. And finally, author of Developing High Quality Data Models, which Anatoly was kind enough to mention. These slides are mostly actually Henson's rather than mine, and are a look at the Model Based Systems Engineering Initiative. Slide two, please, Peter. Nkosi defines MBSC as Model Based Systems Engineering is the formalized application of modeling to support system requirements, design analysis, verification, and validation activities, beginning in the conceptual design phase and continuing throughout development and later life cycle phases. Next slide, slide three, please, Peter.
Slide this up.
Okay, I'm just waiting for it. I'll get it up locally as well. I still don't have it. So there's a series of builds on this one, Peter. If you want to just go through them, and I'll talk whilst you do. What you see is, over time, that the way that we create our designs has changed, moving from the drawing board through to document generation, where you would make the drawing in a computer and then print it out from the computer, then a series of different models of different aspects of the system, actually all as computer models, but no interaction between them, no connection between them. And then finally, we're getting to the point where we have interconnected systems where they are sharing the same data, and the different models show different perspectives on a single model rather than a separate set of separate models. I'm not quite sure where you've got to. My screen is thoroughly frozen at this end. So if we look at...
I'm at the end.
Okay, that's good.
I actually pulled up the PDF version of it, which shows the finish of the build.
Okay, excellent. So if we move on to the next slide, which is the Nkosi MBSE roadmap. This shows the extending maturity and capability going over time, and the way that the different parts have been brought together. If we move on to and the way they're going to be brought together, I should say, over the next decade or so. If we move on to the next slide, topic seeking ontology help. So the potential for upper ontologies as metadata to help organize and manage engineering data, the use of ontology for modeling composite structures, development of specific hierarchies of domain ontologies for inclusion in SysML modeling, and the use of ontology results to construct good modeling principles for SysML modeling. So this is now moving on to what I believe is slide 6, vision for integration of reasoning with systems engineering. What this shows is the roughly the V model for systems engineering. So you see the V in the middle: requirements, design, implementation, test and verification, and deployment, where you check against things at different levels. And the various checks that you need to go through. And these are all the life cycle that shows how you need to have a shared data throughout these different phases. Next slide, please. And here we have the slide titled Significant Research Results on Embedding SysML in Logics. And you can see here the way that class diagrams can be expressed as some combination of AL and first-order logic, with classes and properties corresponding to a fragment of FOL, which gives you decidability for some things, first-order logic giving you quantifiers and n-ary predicates and functions, and type theory giving you a higher-order logic and set theory like abstraction. Next slide. So here's a use case that you might look at to see how this could be applied. So you have the components that get added to designs during the course of design development, e.g. a pump. You might want to make the system design become invalid if design constraints are violated. So, for instance, if you want to be able to detect if an inappropriate pump has been installed or is proposed to be installed. These problems aren't apparent from a manual model of inspection, because sometimes it's one of the things that's interesting when you get into an operational environment is that when you're replacing something, the only thing you may have is what's already installed, and you can end up trying to install something that is at least as good and sometimes in principle better, but you can actually end up installing something that has a specification which is nominally better but actually doesn't work, and that's not something that's easy to tell without actually having requirements available. And they're working with computer scientists to produce examples and feasibility studies. Okay, so plans forward are about continuing prototyping and reasoning with use cases. Hopefully the Ontology Summit will produce material that could be used in the MBSE context. And they're looking for members of OAT willing to take on responsibilities for tasks. So if you want to volunteer, let Henson know. And now next slide, please. Quick review of objectives.
This is Henson, and I'm making a couple of comments.
Yes, oh, right, yes, please do.
First is, these charts are by and for engineers, and I just thought that might be interesting to the Ontology Summit. These were charts that were presented last weekend at an NCOSI, workshop, international workshop. And so it's simply to make the point that I think that engineers are aware of a lot of the things that we've been talking about, and they're certainly aware of ontologies and the potential help that ontologies might provide. I think they often understand the differences between ontologies, languages to express them in, and whatever. And so I just thought that this might be good for you guys to see, to get a calibration of how pretty mainstream engineering looks at this stuff.
Well, since you're there, do you want to speak to the rest of your slides, Henson, since we can hear you? Can you see your slide?
I've lost the,
okay.
The network.
I'll carry on then.
Yeah.
So a quick review of objectives, which is slide 10. We want to use the formalism of ontologies to represent knowledge in fields of interest to us. Space flight in particular, systems engineering in general, and the fundamental phenomena underlying the above, physics, chemistry, economics, psychology, politics, probability, etc. We want these knowledge representation conventions to be stable and durable, independent of particular programs, projects, organizations, and software tools. We want to customize or adapt our modeling analysis tools to support our knowledge representation conventions, at least to translate to and from internal representations. At best, to teach the tool to operate on our concepts and properties as extensions or specializations of its native counterparts. Next slide, please, slide 11. So here we have a simplified view of JPL ontologies. They're divided into three main categories: foundation, discipline, and application. And each ontology may import other ontologies. Slide 12, please. Okay, well, this one's actually my slide, and what I'd like to do is just tell a story about this, because this is one of the things that's always fascinated me about systems, is an idea which I usually describe as a system component. What I want to do is just take you through the life of the system component, and I've got a pump in the design on the right hand side here, P101, and C1 and C2 are two distillation columns in the distillation unit. And this is an imaginary discussion between several of the engineers that are involved in the life cycle of this. So the designer says, well, here's my drawing of the distillation column. And you can see P101 is the system component that pumps liquid away from the bottom of the column into column 2. The construction engineer says, but I've got pump serial number 5755A. And I'm going to install that there. Why don't you change your drawing to use that number instead? And the operator says, no, don't do that. It's a replaceable part. And I don't want to have to change the number on the drawing each time you replace the pump. Think of the cost. And never mind the confusion it would cause the operators, having to tell them about the new number every time the pump changed. Sometime later, of course, the pump breaks down and needs to be taken back to the workshop. The maintenance engineer says to the operator, hi, can I take pump serial number 5755A installed as P101 back to the workshop? And the operator says, sure, but what am I supposed to do without my P101? If it doesn't exist, I can't operate my plant. Maintenance engineer says, oh, okay, we have another pump, serial number P3456, and we'll put that in its place. Then you'll be without a pump for just a few hours. But how can you continue to call it P101 when its parts have changed all at once? The operator says, I don't care about that. What I care about is that it's connected to my system and it pumps the liquids from the bottom of the column. As long as it does that, it's P101 to me. Sometime later, the plant's demolished. And the operative says, a sad end. I was very fond of P101, but now it is no more. And the maintenance engineer says, yes, unfortunately, we can take P3456 and use it on another plant. Now, what you get there is some of the conundrums that are sort of bound up in ideas of system components and the things that are installed to become them for periods of time. I talk about that because for me this is one of the least satisfactory things when you look through ontologies. Very few ontologies, it seems to me, do a decent job of reflecting what a system component is, and there is certainly very little consensus amongst ontologies about what a system component is. Okay, well that's the end of what I had to say. Are there any further questions?
Last chance to show your hand if you would like to speak.
Okay, then I think I'm going to take that as no, and in which case it remains for me to thank our speakers for their contributions. They were really very good. So Jack Ring, Natalie Levenshuk, Giancarlo Gisardi and myself. It's been a very interesting and stimulating evening, as you can see by looking at the chat room. So thank you all very much, and a special thanks to Peter for doing the magic that makes it all happen. Good evening and good night.
Thank you. Great session. Bye, everyone.